Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, live from Bonn, Germany. This is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo. Coming up, a coup in Burkina Faso as the presidential guard seizes power. The prospects for a swift return to democratic governance appear bleak.
It's really difficult to see how elections can take place in this current environment.
And on a rather more cheerful note, Mozambique is now officially free of landmines.
Mozambique knows that there is a possibility of the odd mine being found in future. But the key message here today is that all the known landmines have been dealt with.
We will also be going to Burundi and Sierra Leone, as well as hearing your thoughts on this week's African stories. Stay tuned.
Top story.
A sporadic gunfire rang out on the street. The military of Burkina Faso took to the airwaves on Thursday to declare that it now controls the country in a coup mounted just weeks before elections. Witnesses said at least one person was killed when the presidential guard, seeking to disperse crowds of protesters, opened fire with live ammunition. Several others were treated for gunshot wounds. Burkina Faso was on the path to democratic governance. How did it lose its way almost overnight? Sandra Oparaji and Fred Muvuni have compiled this fact box.
Burkina Faso was due to hold elections on October 11 this year that many hoped would strengthen democracy. The Western African country has suffered from recurring military coups since the 1980s.
A former French colony, Burkina Faso gained independence as Upper Volta in 1960. Since independence, the military has on several occasions intervened during times of crisis. In 1983, Captain Thomas Sankara seized power and adopted radical left-wing policies. He renamed the country Burkina Faso, which translates as the land of honest men.
In 1987, Sankara was overthrown in a coup which was staged by his one-time colleague Blaise Compaoré, who went on to reintroduce a multi-party system. Sankara was killed during the coup. Blaise Compaoré instead won elections in 1991, 1998, 2005, and 2010. But his plans to extend his 27-year rule was aborted in 2014 by angry Burkinabes who wanted a change.
Burkina Faso has gone through many domestic and external challenges. It has had economic problems, human rights accusations, and allegations that it was involved in the smuggling of diamonds by rebels in Sierra Leone.
The military coup comes after nearly a year since protesters went on the streets and forced President Blaise Compaoré out of office. In November 18, 2014, Michel Kafando was named acting president after long-serving leader Blaise Compaoré. The veteran diplomat was chosen by a special panel composed of religious, military, political, civil, and traditional leaders, following the signing of a charter setting out a year-long transition to elections.
The military colonel, Isaac Yakuba Zida, who had seized control of Burkina Faso, stepped aside for Michel Kafando due to international pressure. Later in November last year, he was retained as a prime minister. It remains to be seen where Burkina Faso heads after the current political turmoil.
Sandra Oparaji and Fred Muvunye. The crowds which gathered to protest against the coup in the capital Ouagadougou were chanting "Down with the RSP," a reference to the presidential security regiment to which the coup leaders belong. The protesters also ransacked the offices of Compaoré's CDP party, the Congress for Democracy and Progress. So what are the motives and objectives of the coup leaders? Mark Caldwell has been speaking to Imad Mesdoua, political risk analyst with Africa Matters in the UK.
Well, so far, the leader of the coup, General Diendéré, has come out to say that the official reason for the coup is to have avoided Burkina Faso being destabilized. This is to quote his exact words, saying that the transition process, which Kafando and Zida were overseeing, was not inclusive. Ahead of the coup, there were a number of measures taken by the transition government to exclude members of the former ruling party, the CDP, and Diendéré and a number of RSP officials are very close to the CDP party, which former President Compaoré headed for many years. But I think the underlying reasons are far more complex. There are a number of interests behind this, and it remains to be seen beyond the RSP and beyond Diendéré, which other political actors are behind this coup.
So could the coup have been avoided if that exclusion process hadn't taken place?
Well, I'm not sure. It's not entirely clear whether or not it could have been avoided. Certainly, it's worth noting that the RSP regiment was not very happy with the situation. They had caused a number of problems for Prime Minister Zida for the year that preceded this coup. They had four mutinies. It was something that had been boiling under the surface, the tensions between the RSP regiment and the transition officials. I think something which may have maybe pushed them even more towards this coup was a report which was issued last week, which recommended to the transition government that this regiment in particular should be dissolved or disbanded. And I think for this regiment, which has always been very powerful, it's the elite force in the Burkina Faso army, for them to have been disbanded was, you know, seen as the tipping point for them, pushing them towards action and towards this coup.
What's going to happen to the elections that were planned for October the 11th?
Well, I really don't think they're likely to take place in the current conditions we're now in. You have General Diendéré and this new council that the RSP has set up saying that they're in charge now. And I think they're unlikely to go ahead with the elections. And certainly the climate isn't favorable to that now. And he's made the promise that he would like to return power to the civilians as soon as possible. But there are no dates given. And so it's really difficult to see how elections can take place in this current environment.
What's been the response on the ground to this coup from the general public?
For now, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of frustration also. A lot of the major areas in Ouagadougou, the capital, where protests could have taken place, are basically shut down by RSP forces. There are reports coming out that they've beaten some people who were trying to protest. There are arrests also of key figures. I think what we're witnessing is actually a clampdown, which suggests that this coup has been well prepared and well coordinated for some time now.
Can you see the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, intervening in this coup?
The African Union has already issued a statement condemning the coup, and there are a number of other international organizations which have done the same. One would expect that ECOWAS is likely to issue that similar kind of statement, but that is just my guess. I have not read anything so far which suggests that ECOWAS is taking a stand or issuing any statement. Certainly, they'd be best placed to do it, and there are a number of key actors in that organization which could potentially put pressure on all political actors in Burkina Faso to get back to the negotiation table to restore some sense of political order.
Imad Mesdoua, political risk analyst with Africa Matters in the UK.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
The government of Mozambique officially declared the country free of landmines on Thursday after more than two decades of mine-clearing operations. The announcement was made after the Halo Trust, a British charity, said it had destroyed the last known landmine in the southern African country. The mines were the lethal legacy of a conflict that ended in 1992, and the charity said it had removed 171,000 of them. Calvin Royson works for the Halo Trust. He is their regional director for Southern Africa, and Christina Kripal asked him what the removal of the last mine meant for him personally.
It means a great deal. to me because it brings a great statement and message about what can be achieved if people are able to work together in a positive manner. And by people, I mean governments, in this case the government of Mozambique, mine clearance operators like the Halo Trust, the local people that we employ to do the work, and of course the international donor community that fund this work. Today is a hugely important day, not just for Mozambique, but also for other mine-affected countries that can see clearly that when you have a mines problem, if you work in cooperation, you can get rid of the problem in a reasonable time frame and safeguard your population and safeguard your land.
And what does it mean for Mozambique itself?
For Mozambique, it means a number of things. Firstly, it means for them that they can finally see this legacy of their independence and civil wars gone. So it fosters peace and stability in the country. Secondly, it's a great motivator to facilitate transformation in the country. So where land that was previously unsafe to use has been cleared of mines, it then provides not just local communities, but the country as a whole opportunity to develop that land productively and safely, which is fantastic for reconstruction and socioeconomic development. And then finally, I think it just demonstrates to the world that Mozambique takes some of the issues it faces very seriously and is able to address them and resolve them in a very forthright way, which will encourage all kinds of other collaboration with Mozambique.
But how can Mozambicans be sure in future that there will be no nasty surprise if they go out to work on their mashambas?
What's happened over the last two decades is there's been a systematic assessment, community by community, province by province, to try and understand where the mines are located. And agencies like HALO are able to build up a picture of where the mines are located by speaking to local communities. And our responsibility and the responsibility of the Mozambique government is to clear all the known minefields and to clear all the landmines from those known minefields. Now, that's what's been achieved today. Mozambique knows that there is a possibility of the odd mine being found in future. That is possible. It could be mines that no one knows yet exist. No one yet has seen or reported. That is possible. But the key message here today is that all the known landmines, all the known minefields have been dealt with. And that's something that is really worthy of massive celebration.
Calvin Rosen, Regional Director for Southern Africa at the HALO Trust. You are listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Human rights.
Authorities in Burundi have arrested more than 150 people as part of a crackdown on government opponents, according to a local rights group, the Burundian League for Human Rights. It said that some of the detainees had been killed and others tortured. In the 5 months of violence that has gripped Burundi since President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he was running for a third term, victims who have been attacked or killed include prominent military officers, politicians and activists. A key UN human rights official is among those voicing grave concern, as Apollinaire Nyirora reports from Bujumbura.
Different quarters have raised concern about the human rights situation in Burundi since late April, following protests against the third-term bid of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. The head of the UN High Commission for Human Rights in Burundi, Patrice Vahad, told Deutsche Welle that the current human rights situation in the East African nation is regrettable.
The situation is not the best. It is not good. It's regrettable. But there's a general view to focus on electoral violence. We would go beyond and before the electoral violence and point a finger to the structural violence that exists in this country, which have to do with the culture of impunity and violence as a means of expression. And we do think that this twin issue needs to be addressed for tranquility and for prosperity and for peace and stability.
Vahad also called for dialogue to address the ongoing violence in Burundi. Burundian First Vice President Gaston Sindimo, on the other hand, said dialogue was going on.
We continue to speak with various stakeholders of the country's socio-political life. We are sure that we can reach the goal. We cannot solve this crisis by bowing to pressure from the international community, but only by engaging Burundians in dialogue. And only then can Burundians have peace and security.
Several organizations, both local and international, have called for sustainable talks that would bring together the Burundian government and other stakeholders, including those in exile. Vahad also denounced arrest and detention abuses.
There are incidents of arbitrary arrest and detention. The most important point is really the ability to address those, because anything that is out of the scope of law is not to be encouraged, and we need to collectively work on that. Otherwise, yes, there are several people who complain of torture, several people who complain of arbitrary arrest. We have been discussing it quite extensively with the police authorities that in the shaping of the new Burundian police that is respectful of human rights, practice such as torture and arbitrary arrest and detention needs to cease.
Local human rights organizations have reported that at least 100 people have been killed since late April following protests against the third-term bid of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza. Nkurunziza was eventually elected for a controversial third term on July the 21st in a presidential poll boycotted by the opposition. After his re-election, selective killings have been taking place, targeting especially senior political leaders and military officials. The assassination attempt on Friday the 11th of September against Burundian Army Chief of Staff Major General Prime Niyongabo followed the assassination of Lieutenant General Adolphe Nshimirimana, former intelligence chief in Kamenge neighborhood in the capital Bujumbura, on August the 2nd. Just one day later, Pierre Claver Mbonimpa, chairman of the rights group organization, escaped an assassination attempt.
Apollinaire Niyorora. In Sierra Leone, 9 people have now been confirmed dead and hundreds made homeless after parts of the capital, Freetown, were hit by massive flooding following hours of torrential rain. School children and babies are among the dead. The death toll is expected to rise as worried families look for missing relatives at the city's Connaught mortuary. Survivors have been telling harrowing accounts of narrow escapes, as our correspondent in Freetown, Mutala Kamara, reports.
Fudia Kamara, a resident in one of the largest slum community in Freetown, known as Krube, nearly died before she was rescued.
Over 30 years on the bay.
I have been living at the Crow Bay for over 30 years, but I've never witnessed this kind of situation for water to take the whole place.
All over the place.
Furia, who is presently seeking shelter at the National Stadium, says she witnessed the death of some of her close neighbor who was trying to save his mother, who was inside the house after the water took over the whole house.
What happened to me, neighbor?
A young man went inside to save his mother. He passed through the ceiling and went inside. The mother asked him to take the 2 small children first. The boy took the children on his arm. On his way out, a leaked electric wire touched the boy and he died. The mother was still inside the water, crying for his son, and the 2 children were also crying for their brothers who died on the roof.
The government spokesman, Abdullahi Berete, said apart from having deployed the military and the police on a search and rescue mission, The government is working hard to help the people who have been affected by the floods.
We are concentrating whilst providing psychosocial support and providing the material support the displaced people needed that we have housed at the National Stadium, the Atuga Stadium in the East End, as well as at Ferry Junction. We are also concentrating on preventive mechanisms, particularly when there is a prediction that Sierra Leone is going to have unusual rainfalls.
And Fudia, who lost her entire properties, is now calling on the government and other relief organizations to help them relocate to a safer place.
Me and the big papa government, all the NGOs are at this wall.
I'm not happy living there because I know our lives are at stake now, especially when it rains. I'm not happy. My heart is bleeding. I have lost all my properties and I am now a refugee. I had to borrow this wrapper to cover myself. I was even given a pant by another woman. I have suffered enough.
I don't suffer in my life.
Earlier this year, according to the government spokesman Begete, the government had requested the people living in those areas worst hit to evacuate. And they even provided plots of lands for some of them. But many of them didn't accept the government's offer.
Mutala Kamara in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Your say.
And this is the point in the program where you tell us what you think of the stories we've been covering here on Africa Link. We now join Happiness Matanji and Eunice Wanjiru.
Hi everyone. Let's begin with responses on the report about South Sudan's President Salva Kiir on his declaration to implement the peace agreement that he signed with the rebel faction led by former Vice President Riek Machar on August 26. From Tanzania, Rasmanko says it has become a game of rat and cat. Remember, an infant needs a caretaker. Please take care of our youngest nation, South Sudan.
Aliu Muhammad in Nigeria commented and said, although we can only guess Salva Kiir's motives, the assurance that he is committed to respect all the signed peace agreement is really commendable. Now the rebel leader Riek Machar and his people also need to follow the same path for the good of all.
On the other hand, we have Usman bin Affan, also in Nigeria, who says both sides concerned need to know that this is their last chance of escaping from American and UN sanctions. He adds that if they play with this chance, the country will be in double problem, war and sanction, which will never let the country move forward in terms of political, social and economic development.
Now let's move to another topic on the issue of Ebola in Sierra Leone, whereby it has witnessed a setback this week in the fight to eradicate the disease. Aliu Muhammad commented on this.
Oh yes, and he said that Sierra Leone has redoubled its effort and introduced some extraordinary precautionary measures to avoid the recurrence of the Ebola case.
Back to Germany. We reported about the Germany-Africa Economic Summit last week. One of the things discussed was the steep fall of oil prices, which has led to an interruption of the economic boom in Africa, fueled by natural resources. But the continent still believes itself to be a place of opportunity.
Ras Manko in Tanzania say that Africa in general has no way to avoid the modern colonialism, which is deeming on our natural resources. He says Africans have to agree with the Germans as well, as they have with other big nations like USA and China, who came earlier and signed some agreements for their benefits.
Well, that's all we had for today.
Thank you for your comments.
Happiness Matanji and Eunice Wanjiru. The address for your comments, including your answers to Wednesday's opinion question, is Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. You can also send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or an SMS to country code 49160957 59510, and you'll say returned at the same time next week. In another news now, deadly oil tanker explosion in South Sudan. Authorities in the capital Juba have said the death toll has risen to over 100. You can read more about that on our website, dw.com/Africa.
Want to see Africa in pictures? Don't miss DW News, Deutsche Welle's new TV channel. DW, Deutsche Welle, made for minds.
A reminder now of our main stories before we leave you. The presidential guard in Burkina Faso has seized power in a coup just weeks before elections. At least 9 people have died in flooding in Freetown, capital of Sierra Leone, and authorities fear that the death toll might also rise. And Mozambique has declared itself free of landmines. There, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Mark Caldwell will be here with you on Monday. Do join him if you can. From me, Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany, I wish you a pleasant weekend.